Dawn, you know, I knew so little about felting when I started talking to you about you've got to come in and talk to me. And I'm just fascinated. I've been watching videos online on how this sort of thing is done. And even after seeing those, it still seems like magic to me. So talk to me about how is felt made? Because I didn't know earlier.
Yes, and that's a wonderful question because historically, well, one, felt is the most ancient of textiles. Came about quite by accident, more than likely. A little wool on the ground, moisture from rain or snow. People walk on it, and voila, you have felt. And it may not have been the most beautiful felt, but of course, felt was originally a functional item for clothing and yurts and that type of thing.
Yeah.
So I believe that the oldest felt that is known on record was found in the Siberian burial tombs. It goes back to, I believe, like the 5th century BC.
Wow.
And if you were to look at that, it's stored in the Hermitage Museum in St. Petersburg, Russia. And it actually looks very artistic. If you were to see it at the Kalamazoo Institute of Arts, you would think that an artist in this day and age may have made that. And so it was actually believed in ancient days to have magical properties.
Well, I think it does. I learned that there is needle felting and wet felting. Mm-hmm. And to me, the magical part is, as you mentioned, it probably was developed by accident mm-hmm. or by people walking on it. I was watching some of this online, and there's nothing really holding it together. It just kind of melts together these fibers mm-hmm. and becomes quite durable. But describe yes. how this works. Describe the process.
Right. So if you were to look at the wool under a microscope, it would have scales or barbs on the wool fibers. And when that is wet with water or soapy water and agitated, I just use my hands, those fibers entangle. And so the entanglement is actually what causes the felt to be created. And so I do think it's magic. You go
it
from,
is.
You know, having these fluffy fibers.
Yeah, all this loose,
yes.
cottony stuff.
Right.
And then you kind of press it and work it. And,
right.
And it comes together.
It does. And so it can be a very low-tech type of craft or art. You don't have to have a whole lot of tools, although you can. There are, of course, things that, you know, will help speed the process up now. But I can go to a hotel when I'm teaching and I've got water in the hotel room and I've got shampoo and my hands. And of course, everyone travels with a little bubble wrap and some wool. And so I can make
a hat. I don't know about the bubble wrap. But
So with just those simple things, I can make a hat in my hotel room while I'm teaching and staying in different locations. So it's really quite magical and an easy thing to jump into. You can start out with something simple
yeah.
and then work up to very complex pieces, but using very simple items that you probably, most of the things you probably have on hand other than the wool and you know, just a couple of
things. Is there anything special about the wool that you use, or it can be any kind of wool?
Right. Well, there are uses for all kinds of wool. I use merino wool because it's the finest, softest of the wools. All wool has a different micron. And so the lower the micron count, which is just a measurement of the wool, the finer the wool. And since I primarily do wearables, hats, nice, soft, fine wool is going to be more comfortable for the wearer.
Yeah.
But a coarse wool would be excellent for, say, felt slippers or wall hangings.
Tote bags.
Tote
something.
Bags.
Yeah.
Yes, you would want something that would be stronger than a merino.
So what is the difference between needle felting and, well, wet felting? It sounds like you do more of that.
Yes, I actually started out needle felting. A friend of mine saw an advertisement for a needle felting class, and I knew nothing about felting this was about, I think, about 15 years ago. And so we always have fun, whatever we do, and off we went to this class. And so you're using very sharp barbed needles to bind the fibers together. And so you do a lot of stabbing at the wool.
I saw some of that online. It's like a round, maybe a little smaller than palm size tool.
Right. And they come in all different sizes. So if you were making something very detailed, you may just want one barbed needle. If you were making a large sculpture, you may want
it
one of the tools
bigger.
That would
oh,
be larger and have multiple needles.
Okay.
But I found that I wasn't great at needle felting because I was too clumsy. And if you stab yourself with those needles, it hurts. But I did start out needle felting. It's a lot of repetitive motion. And so if you're doing a whole lot of it, you need to be careful so that you're not getting carpal tunnel type symptoms or that type of thing. So you'd want to, you know, use a little bit of caution and make sure that you're stretching and, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
But as you said, I do more wet felting now. Sometimes I'll do a little needle felting just for some little detail work. But primarily I wet felt, which is the traditional method of felting. And so I'm just laying out wool fibers over a resist or a pattern. Most felt makers call it a resist because if you're making a hat, say, and you want to create a hollow shape, you have to put something in between either side of that hat so that the wool fibers don't felt together, so that you're able to get your hat into the center. And
so they're actually layers.
Yes.
And you've got a hat here that you brought in. So
right.
There are several layers in here?
Yes, that I believe is four layers. And your listeners won't be
so
able to see this.
You kind of build it.
Right.
Well, we do have the webpage that goes with this. So we'll have some images.
I did bring a pattern that you can see, which is the pattern that I used for this particular hat that we're looking at. And so you can see how large it is when I start.
A lot bigger than the actual hat.
Correct. And I lay the fibers on either side and then felt that. And then it shrinks to about half of the size, which makes for a nice strong felt.
Oh, I imagine as it shrinks that it becomes tighter and
denser
stronger.
Denser and stronger, yes.
Uh-huh. That makes sense. Well, you started telling the story of how you discovered felting with your friend.
Yes.
Was that the discovery moment when you went to this class?
Yes. And so while my friend Peggy was the one who was originally interested in this particular art, it was me who wound up loving it. And so I think probably to this day she rues the day that she took me to this workshop.
Because you're a bit obsessed, aren't
you?
Yeah,
I am. It's a good obsession, though, and I just love it. But it has turned our house into somewhat of a wool museum, so it's everywhere.
Oh, that's fun. And you do mostly hats, or what do you mostly create?
Well, I do primarily sculptural felts, and so hats are something that a lot of people wear. And so I do a lot of hats and I consider them little wearable works of art. But I also do vessels, felt vessels, and wall hangings and scarves and wraps. And pretty much if it is made of something that I can make with wool, I jump in with both feet.
And when you say works of art, they really are. Some of them have really unique shapes, something you wouldn't expect from a hat. How do you come up with some of these ideas?
Well, it's funny. I like making things that are different. I don't want to recreate something that I could buy in a shop.
Yeah.
And I love the artistic and sculptural aspects of felt making. I find a lot of inspiration, I think, like many artists, in nature. And so when I was teaching in Australia, a friend of mine, Catherine O'Leary, who's also a felt maker, took me to her house and she had this paper bark tree. And I don't know if you've ever seen one. I think you can find them in Florida also. So they're in warmer climates. But I think in Australia, sometimes they're considered a nuisance tree because they have this spongy, peeling bark.
Ah.
Well, if you're an artist, I think you look at that and think, that is so cool. It's just, it had wonderful textures. And so as soon as I came home, I wanted to recreate that. And so I did a sculptural hanging piece. And then this hat is based on a blue coral in Australia. And I just find inspiration a lot of times in simple things, walking my dog and looking at a pine cone. I've got pine cone hats and some kind of...
Oh, I saw that online. That is really
some kind
cool.
of fun things, but...
Big old pine cones.
Yes.
It's wonderful.
So, yeah, I think inspiration...
And flowers.
Flowers, yes.
Yeah, you've done some wonderful things with huge blooms that you can wear on your head.
Yes, I love Van Gogh's sunflowers, and so I've got a hat that was inspired by one of the sunflower paintings, and I think inspiration is just found everywhere we look.
Do you think about the buyer when you're creating, or the buyer kind of comes across to you in your market? A lot of women don't wear hats the way they did in perhaps my mother's growing up mm-hmm. generation. Who buys these hats? Who wears them?
Well, I think you'd be surprised in our area. I've got people who collect some of my hats, and they do wear them. And so I do think it's kind of a specialized market, and I like
it's
that.
It's a statement.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I love about creating hats is that it's taken me to some amazing places around the world. There aren't a whole lot of handmade felt hat makers anymore. And so I've taught in Australia and Ireland and Chile.
I saw that. You've been all over with workshops and
yes.
either giving classes or taking classes.
Yes. And I'll be teaching at London Hat Week in the spring. That's in April. And so different areas of the world. Australia has a large population of women who still wear hats, as does London and many parts of the UK. So I think in Michigan, we should all be wearing hats because with our weather, you are subject to frostbite if you're not
and
wearing a hat.
And if it's a sunflower, that much better.
It cheers you up, I think, because we have a lot of cold gray days. And so I think adding a little bit of pizzazz to our wardrobe is a good thing.
How big of a Felter Guild out there is there? You're a co-coordinator of Felt United?
Yes. I think, again, with many artists, when you're creating, you're working in isolation at home. And so I believe it was about 10 years ago, one of my felt mentors from the Netherlands, Alice Vermeulen, and her friend Cynthia Reynolds from Norway created an organization called Felt United. And the sole purpose of that was to join felt artists together on one day. It's the first Saturday of October each year. And a theme was created, and everyone would work around this theme and then post photos of the items that they had made, and people would have felt exhibitions or just open up their home studio to neighbors, and it really caught on. So it started out very small, and I believe it was about 4 or 5 years into Felt United, Cynthia and Alice decided that their work with Felt United was complete and they wanted to hand over the reins, and so contacted me to see if I would be interested in coordinating that. And so, of course, I was. I loved the whole premise of Felt United, and I asked my friend Nicola Brown of Ireland if she would want to help out with that. So it's been really great for both of us to work together and to bring felt makers from all around the world together to celebrate this special day of felt.
And your own business and website mm-hmm. has a cool name too.
My husband actually came up with that for me
okay.
when I was looking for a name for my business. We were throwing a lot of names around. Most of them that we looked at had already been taken. And so he said, how about Felt So Right? And it just clicked,
right.
And it did. And so, I just love that. And I get a lot of comments on the name, but I have to give my husband the credit for that.
Then we shall do so. And you also, you mentioned earlier, you teach. What mm-hmm. kind of workshops, classes do you give them in your studio in Plainwell? Talk about that.
Yes, I do some workshops locally. I just had one within the last month at the Kalamazoo Institute of Arts. That was a Nuno felting workshop where we were creating our own felt. I'll tell you a little bit more about Nuno felting in a moment. But I also teach, of course, I think hats are my most popular workshop. That I teach around the U.S. and around the world. So it's really been a gift to me to be able to travel. I didn't even have a passport before I started felting.
That's and really neat how it's opened up the world to you.
It really has. And it's been such a blessing to me to meet people from all around the world. And when I go to different countries to teach, generally I stay in a host home. And that's wonderful. And it's been a lot of fun. So,
seems like quite a tight community.
It really is. I think fiber artists as a whole are just very warm, welcoming people. I think anything that's kind of touchy-feely, the felt wool fibers, it's just a really wonderful community. And I feel really blessed to be a part of that.
Now, you started saying something about nano felting?
Yeah, Nuno felting. Yes, so it's Nuno, and Nuno means fabric in Japanese.
Ah.
And so it's a way of combining wool and a carrier fabric. Usually it's an open weave, lightweight, such as silk or a cotton gauze fabric. And so it's a way of making a lighter weight felt. And so that was created, the whole concept of Nuno felt, by an Australian felt maker, Polly Sterling, who used to live in the U.S., but I believe she married someone from Australia, and so she's lived there for quite a while, and her business partner, Sachiko. And so I don't know how they ever discovered that by combining a really small amount of wool and a lightweight fabric that you could create these really lightweight drapable fabrics. And so, of course, in Australia, where the temperatures are more moderate, they wanted a lighter weight fabric. And so this is one way of doing that.
Along with that, are there other new developments in this ancient type of textile over the years?
Yeah, there are just always new takes on felt and different techniques that you can use to create amazing textures. And so I think that's one of the things that I love about felt making is you're always going to be curious about learning something new, and you're never going to learn it all. So one of the things that I particularly love to do in my spare time, and I typically just do this in the summer months, it's a process called eco-printing. And so eco-printing is actually printing leaves onto a fabric. And so in my case, I'm using handmade felt. And so the enzymes in the leaves actually leave the imprint of the leaf that you're using. Not all leaves will print. It has to have a large tannin content in order for it to be a printable leaf. And so you're using different mordants to help the leaf enzymes bind to the fabric.
Sounds a little like magic to me again.
Well, it is. And it's also, I always tell people when I was in high school, science wasn't one of my favorite classes. But had I been taught science from a perspective of art and this eco-printing process, there's a lot
something
of chemistry.
That makes sense to you.
Yes, there's a lot of chemistry involved in it. And so I think it's always good to look at different ways of learning for different people. And it's just a really exciting medium for me.
Well, these are beautiful creations. Where can someone buy them? Where do you market your things?
Yes, It depends on how much I'm teaching as to how much time I have to create things for retail. But I'm a member of the Signature Artist Group. And so right now I've got several hats that are at their gallery here in, it's in Portage this year. We move from year to year to an available space. I also have hats at the Muskegon Museum of Arts.
Are those for purchase or
yes.
are they as an mm-hmm. art display?
They're for purchase.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay.
So different shops or galleries will call and see if, you know, if I could provide them with some hats. And so I've still got quite a few in Muskegon.
Well, thank you for coming in, Dawn.
Well, thank
I really
you.
Appreciate it. You've taught me a lot today.
Well, thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
It felt great.
Thank you.